This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Sunday Paper Review
on Off the Ball.
Yep, it is time for the Sunday Paper Review with myself, Shane Hannan, and we are going to comb through the biggest stories and best sports writing in the back pages across the course of the next hour or so. Delighted to have in studio David Sneed of the 42.e. David, how are things?
I'm very well, how are you?
Keeping well. And yeah. Kieran Shannon, sports columnist with the Irish Examiner. Kieran, how are you?
Good, Shane.
Keeping well, lads. We're going to get into plenty over the next hour or so, as always on the Sunday Paper Review, but I'll just, for the people at home and listening, bring you through the back page headlines this Sunday. So on the back page of the Sunday Mirror, we have start from Hull. Carrick says a defeat. Yes, it hurts, but it's just one game. A taxi for Michael Carrick and for Manchester United fans. A play on the fact that the couple of the trains back to Manchester apparently were cancelled. And that was announced over the tannoy to the joy of the Hull City fans yesterday. Hull City 2, Manchester United 0 in the opening weekend of the Premier League. Man City versus Bournemouth today. Enzo, I need new hot rod. Enzo Maresca has admitted that he must find a new Rodri. All of the results from yesterday's action. And a couple of other bits and bobs on the back page of the Sunday Mirror. The back page of the Irish Sun on Sunday. Again, very similar to Hull and back. Bruno slams United for a repeat of away days. Bruno Fernandes laid into Manchester United for failing to learn from the same mistakes in every away game. Bee are joint top of the league. Boss Keith Andrews admits Brentford are in a good place. The Bees joint top of the Premier League with defending champions Arsenal following the 3-0 demolition of Spurs yesterday. And Andrews said it's a different season. Football's a soap opera. That's the reality. There are goodies, there are baddies. And a nice photo of Keith Andrews celebrating yesterday. And Mateta eyes up free exit. Jean-Philippe Mateta is launching an audacious bid to get out of the final 10 months of his Crystal Palace contract. His camp tried to find a legal loophole to cancel the rest of his deal and make him available on a free this summer. The back page of the Irish Sunday People. We have Humberslide is the headline on Hull City 2, Manchester United 0, and a photo of Nusair Mazraoui, Brian Mbeumo and Bruno Fernandes looking particularly dejected. United have a stinker as Premier new boys beat Red Devils for the first time since 1974. We need a Rodri 2.0, more from Enzo Maresca discussing the need for a Rodri, and there's football pullouts in a lot of these pages as well, a lot of these papers as well, of course, because of all the coverage on the Premier League. There's a piece on Liverpool and on money and football generally in the Sunday Business Post on page 21 from Vincent Boland. Billionaire cash flow in danger of drowning the spirit of sport. And a discussion around Jeff Bezos getting involved with Liverpool Football Club. The sports section of the Sunday Times, the front piece says, new season, old problems. De Zerbi's Spurs thrashed 3-0 by Brentford. Newly promoted Hull beat Man United 2-0. And a mention of a few pieces on the inside pages, which we'll get into as well, I'm sure. The Irish Mail on Sunday, one hull of a beating. Bruno's fury is relegation favourites, maul Red Devils. And a photograph of Mendy celebrating and Carrick on the touchline suffering. John Egan, of course, the Irish international involved in that Hull City win yesterday. And Spurs' dose of bad medicine. Singer John Bon Jovi looked on as £41 million midfielder Mamadou Sangare shone for Keith Andrews Brentford against big spending Tottenham last night. Mentions of pieces on Aussie rules. Aussies must be made pay up for poaching GAA stars with the Shane McGrath's piece on the inside. We'll get into that. Richie Power, everything is in a really good place. And an exclusive interview with him in the Irish Daily Mail on Sunday. And meet Mayo FC, glow of Sam rubbing off on new club. Westerners set for FAI National League. Might touch on that one as well across the course of the next hour. And the Sunday Independent sports action finally. The bee's knees. Andrews leads Brentford a stunning start. And a nice photograph of Keith Andrews celebrating with his backroom team that includes Stephen Rice and Damien Duff, of course, after that 3-0 win at the GTEC Community Stadium yesterday. Tigerish Hull turn the tables on drab Devils. Carrick refuses to panic after United lose on opening day. And a nice interview with Chris Hughton. Tackling cancer head on is the headline on that one. Where do we start, lads? David, I know I once met you in the bowels of the Stan Mamés Stadium at halftime of the Europa League final when United lost to Spurs. So a sad day for both of us yesterday, I suppose.
You say about the bowels of the Stan Mamés, I think I was knee-deep in Kalimoto at that stage. The sub-editor in me is looking at those headlines thinking that if only they looked at the headline under 42 and my colleague Emmett Duffy, who came up with, I think, by far the best headline, football, bloody hull.
Oh, right. Very good.
It takes in everything. Just this is the paper review.
That was Richard Jolly's intro. Was it?
Well, Emma got it first. We'll see.
I know, because it was just one of them where it was just staring you right in the face. Has everyone, you know, it lingers back to the glory days of Manchester United, Alex Ferguson, to him and what happened yesterday.
What did happen?
Yeah, well, what happened? Well, we said there, Bon Jovi, to paraphrase Neil Diamond, money talks, but it doesn't sing and dance and defend corners or set pieces, because United just got undone by the basics. Mm. That's the most concerning aspect if you're a United fan of Michael Carrick. They looked slow. They didn't look fit. They couldn't defend set pieces. The midfield rebuild that began with Youri Tielemans, whoever, and kind of everyone did agree was a really good signing for that money, 35 million. Didn't have a great game. He looked very ponderous, was losing a lot of battles in that midfield. Same as well for Andre Santos. And you're looking at it, it was the very basics of the game that let United down, and that would be a concern for Michael Carrick. But you see him there from what he's saying. Like, I know we're going to be talking about, say, documentaries with Pep Guardiola and Mourinho. I know United, that's the process now. United are in the process of doing one, aren't they? With Amazon. I don't think Carrick is going to be the most illuminating figure in that, which is probably a good thing. He's probably the ideal person to actually deal with what could be happening now, because anytime there's a bad result for United, everything comes on top. The fact that it's the first game of the season against a newly promoted team, and the manner of how they played, like another manager, if it was his predecessor who was in charge, you'd be getting all sorts of headlines about how this is the biggest waste of money United have spent, blah blah blah, could be the worst team. But I think Carrick brings an element of calmness to it, which is what United need. But more importantly, he's obviously going to need a result in his next game now as well.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
We're back where we started.
No panic stations, but I suppose you get a bad
one. No, I mean, I think he set the tone right. I mean, it is 38-game season, but it is. Obviously, there was echoes of when, was it the last Brentford 4-0?
Yeah.
4 years ago. Mm. But I think, going back to the word David used, like, about Carrick, I do think he's the right manager for them at this point in time. You know, there were opportunities post-Ferguson for the rock star kind of manager, proven manager, and they just kept missing out on them. It was obviously revealed in the Mourinho documentary that he was even ahead of Moyes. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they missed out on Guardiola, Pochettino. You can go on through the list. But Carrick, to me, I know the comparison always is with Ole Solskjaer, a temporary manager who came from the stable themselves, but you know, he did a good job at Middlesbrough, David. Like, you know, like, and I just think sometimes just someone who knows the club and has some coaching chops about him, I just think where United, where it was right that he stepped in that time last year, and that he has got a go at it. But going back to David's point, they will need results soon again. Yeah, like, there's no doubt about it that losing to a newly promoted club.
No.
It's because you can say it takes a while to get betting in. But like, was I saying that Ipswich had 7 new signings playing yesterday?
Well, Ipswich have like the fourth highest net spend.
Yeah.
You know, over the summer. And they've all gone under the radar.
They got going right away, you know. That's what Croke Park. Did you get to Croke Park for that game? Did you?
The Man United game. Yeah. I went with my nephew and brother-in-law. Yeah.
And is it like they're meant to be in pre-season? Like, what could you see that they were integrating? That it was a prep more than a cash in.
I think
they won the World Sports Cup. You have to remember.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Sadly, I missed them lifting that. You know, he was bombing down the canal to get home at that stage. But I think part of. It did feel like a bit of a kind of a bolt from the blue, though, in terms of the performance. Not so much the result, because like the whole thing with Carrick, he took over, and I know obviously they weren't playing in Europe, so he was able to have a bit more time, and that's kind of almost been used as a bit of a stick to beat him with, the fact that the previous manager made such a mess of things that was somehow whatever Carrick's fault. But for United to have qualified for the Champions League from where they were last year was a great achievement from Carrick. And I know people were kind of using the whole everything that happened with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and you know it's following that same pattern. You give the job to a club kind of, I don't even think he's a kind of a club legend in the same way that Solskjaer would be, in terms of that kind of with the fans. Like, what he did as a player was exceptional. Carrick wouldn't be kind of maybe in the hearts of as many fans as Solskjaer would have been, but he showed, and as well, I'm just double checking, he showed with Steve Holland, who came in and Jonathan Woodgate was in there as well, and obviously now Johnny Evans is on the staff there as well. But with Steve Holland, he kind of quietly built a kind of solid foundation in there and changed things very quickly, and I think he deserved to be in the mix for the job. But I don't obviously cover Man United as a journalist, so I don't know what their thinking was in terms of who would go and get the job or what their shortlist would have been. And obviously the World Cup kind of maybe can sometimes kind of muddy the waters a little bit. But that's what kind of was more of a surprise going into this for this game, was just how bad the performance was, because pre-season generally has looked pretty positive in terms of like just how they were playing. They did look quite sharp, but only had that bad result against AC Milan and were showing up a little bit, but there was maybe changes in there. The signings who have come in, I know, isn't it? Baleba is pretty much done now as well from Brighton. But I know from speaking to people in the Premier League who would have been in the market for players, there's still massive concerns about him and his actual ability to last in games. So I don't think United fans thinking this fella is going to come in and all of a sudden cure a lot of ills in that midfield. That's not going to happen. And even the fellas who have come in, from people I've been speaking to, they're saying really good players, and if they gel together and Carrick gets the system right with them, will make a difference. But on their own, there's deficiencies there in those players, the likes of the lad who came in from Chelsea,
Andre Santos,
in terms of his athleticism and his dynamism, because that's so important. Good footballer, apparently really great fella, but actually what he can do on the pitch, unless you have the right blend beside him, it's going to be a struggle. Same as well with Tielemans. Like, he's proven Premier League player with Aston Villa at that level. Villa, who obviously been up there with United for the last while, kind of that calibre. But it's whether or not they're all together going to gel and be that midfield kind of change. Kobbie Mainoo was another one there. So
yeah.
I think that's still, it's like United, it's like the whole Premier League as a whole. It now seems that United are in a bit of a state of flux with all those players coming in. And whether or not Carrick will be able to find that system to make it work, because it has to work. At a club like United, it does have to work quickly. You know, you can't. Yeah. I think like Amorim got so much time and patience, and that was given to him by supporters. That's not gonna be the case, I don't think, this time around.
Wouldn't have thought so. Like, you just look at it. So Hull at 28% possession. But as Jonathan Northcroft says in the Sunday Times, it didn't flatter them, the result necessarily. There was a lot of other chances.
But that's even the whole manager was talking about, looking at United in pre-season. They changed. They had been playing with a back four in pre-season themselves. And so, well, actually, we'll go with back five. We'll go low block and we'll hit them on the counter, and we'll be able to actually suffocate the space and be able to basically nullify United. So they decided to rip up what they were doing in pre-season off the back of what they saw United doing, and were backed themselves to be able to frustrate United, and they did. You know, other than a couple of early opportunities in the first half, United didn't have a sniff. And that's the concerning thing. And obviously, Bruno Fernandes coming out and saying it was the same old problems with giving the ball away. You don't really mind if you're giving the ball away if you're trying to create something. Everyone, listen, he's a number one figure for that. But it was other stuff. It was basics of defending. That's what cost them yesterday.
It was just, when you see Maguire marking Mazraoui, obviously, for the for the first goal, it doesn't look great. Nathan Sald mentions in the Irish Mail on Sunday as well, what you said, Jurcevic, the Hull City manager and his staff, so easy to expose United's flaws. He says they watched the 4-2 defeat by AC Milan, as you mentioned, in the pre-season. He said it was a system which left huge gaps in the fullback areas to exploit. Set pieces also viewed as a major area of weakness. He said, we watched United three times, one time live. We saw their problems, and then we tried to use this today. Sounds simple, isn't it?
It kind of goes back. Remember when?
Was that towards the end of Ten Hag? Was it?
Or I think that was the start. Was it the start of the season? Liverpool won the league under Slot. Yeah. I remember he came out, wasn't it, Old Trafford, and basically said it was like a soliloquy. He just like desecrating on Ten Hag, essentially.
That was it for him. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's such a long season.
It is.
And like, you look at some of the quality that's in that United team, and obviously, I don't know, stuff with Sesko, he wasn't really fit to start. That was another thing. You could just tell you need that figurehead, you need that person leading the line or providing, giving you that kind of bit of a physical presence. The way United were playing up top, they didn't have that at all. Even when he came on, he obviously isn't going to be sharp enough. But that goes back. It goes back to why Arsenal are more than likely going to win the league. Still haven't maybe got that depth. Do you know what I mean? If you're losing a couple of players, you should still be able to cope with it against a newly promoted team. And like, again, going back to it, like, even throughout the league, people are looking at Arsenal and their level of depth, and it's already setting them apart.
Again, it's early doors, but same old Spurs as well. Like, some things don't change. Look, again, it's early in the season. And last season, I think they started the season really well and ultimately finished 17th again. But Spurs fans, because John Duggan was here yesterday, we'll chat to him later on. He'll be presenting the show from 1 o'clock, and he was buzzing yesterday as a Spurs fan before the game.
I was chatting to him there. He's in the depths. He's in the absolute depths.
He said he was. It was the most optimistic he'd been ahead of a Spurs season in years. Mm. And then obviously one result can bring it.
Yeah, well, look, there. I mean, as you say, like, it's early days. Look, and you can't keep harping back to, oh, this is what it was for Ferguson. But I would, you know, when United made that breakthrough in 92, 93, I remember, was it they lost their first two games, was it? Sheffield United and then Everton at home. Mm. Dion Dublin got a goal near the end against Southampton. They started getting some momentum, and then obviously Cantona came in. Then, like, I don't think either of those teams are going to win. But obviously United to win the Premier League, because just going back to the word that just comes to Arsenal is both depth and continuity, you know, that solidity that they have. So they're looking best placed. But United, you would think or hope that their aspiration should be to have some form of title challenge, because even in all the other years they've made Champions Leagues, like, they've never actually challenged for a title post 2013, you know.
And you look at Arsenal, the likes of Arsenal, and it's mentioned in the Sunday Independent as well, the fact that they're still strengthening. You know, they can go out and buy Ezri Konsa when they've issues in defence.
Because even with that, with Arsenal and Spurs, and again, and obviously it's the papers, boy, who's writing about this today in the 42.
Yeah, but the transfer window.
It's mad, because it's taking people by surprise, and even from speaking to a few different people at clubs there, even lads who are involved in getting players and working on the deals, even with Spurs, like, Spurs were going big early on, where, like, people were looking at players and they were saying, oh, Spurs are going for Tonali, like, De Zerbi is convinced he's getting Tonali, and obviously he spent over 100 million to go and get him. No one, those clubs looking at that, not saying, oh, they're not going to do that, like, they're not really going to do that, and that took other clubs who were in the market for him by surprise, you know, because the clubs are hearing, well, he's going to go to, like, Spurs are going to go big for him, and they're like, well, I think he actually fancies going to Man City. His agent had been at Chelsea a couple of times and then kind of got the vibes that it wasn't really, he wasn't really fancying going to Stamford Bridge. And even with that, like, De Zerbi has so much control there now.
Yeah,
at a point where, like, even the fact that getting the lad Van Hecke from Brighton, I was chatting to him at a club, he was like, Brighton have done very well out of that deal, getting 50 million for the lad in the last year of his contract. But it ties in with, say, Arteta, who obviously has so much control, is in a much stronger position. Obviously, he's won the league and what he's building at Arsenal. But even how, like, the lad now, whose name has just gone out of my head, at Club Bruges, who in Villa now are going to go for. But, like, Arteta was getting pushed on him a little bit by Berta, the director of football, because they were getting told, other clubs getting told, well, this is the lad who Arsenal want. But then Arteta was like, no, I want someone who is good to go now, don't need potential, especially in defence, I want a solid defender. And they go and spend 50 million on Ezri Konsa, it was going to be 29 this year. Like, they're not the deals, the way football is now, they're not the deals that clubs want to be going and doing, unless it's a 28, you know, at the top end of a pitch. Konsa is essentially going to be a squad player there. You know, he'll come in at right back for certain games, he'll play at centre back when there's injuries, which is obviously is the case at the moment. But it's just tying in with just that sense with Arsenal that they're going now to go and win. And clubs, I won't use the language as it was put to me, clubs are getting their act together, are trying to get their act together around Arsenal. They have it together and are looking at them saying they could go and dominate this year, potentially go and do it next year, unless the clubs who have done their business have done it right. Because we look at, obviously, Liverpool playing later on, new manager as well. Maresca gone in at City. They have all the money in the world. But, like, and we don't know what's coming down the line with the charges and all the rest of it. But unless the manager goes and does the business and can get the players to properly kind of kick on, especially you mentioned Ferguson here and after Guardiola is left, it's a huge vacuum. There's none of those doubts, there's none of that uncertainty around Arsenal at all. And they're just so set up. And, you know, obviously it was only a newly promoted team, but, like, they blitzed Coventry. Do you know what I mean? And as the season goes on, and there's going to be injuries, there's going to be suspensions, that is the squad that looks best equipped to be able to deal with anything that's coming down the tracks. And when you think about Man City down the years, you would have always thought it was them, especially with Guardiola, but now it's looking like it's going to be Arsenal.
Yeah, 100%. Alison Rudd mentions Christos Tsoulas, the young Greek lad who played really well in the Community Shield and on Friday night against Coventry as well. And Just talking about cult heroes and the work ethic of the likes of Darwin Nunez at Liverpool, who wasn't the greatest of footballers, but tried hard. She mentions supporters love a trier. They also love someone who dovetails with ease, and who has clearly worked so hard in training that the fitness coaches decided his nickname should be Leonidas, after the King of Sparta, portrayed by Gerard Butler in the film 300. So yeah, he obviously works hard, Solis, so we'll keep an eye on him over the next while, but definitely the opportunity to be a cult hero more, but perhaps at Arsenal. Will we touch on you're a Forest fan, Kieran, as well, so how do you feel about the new season?
Well, look, to be honest with you, there's still a bit of me, well, we're in the Premier League, you know, there's still a bit of that after those 28
relief
years. But it's, by the same token, like Glasner got the job, he's a good solid manager, but just the turnover of managers we're talking there about embedded, he's going to have to be given time. But it's, so like last year, Forrest, we were saying about Brentford and how they start so well at the start of seasons, down in big guns, or Forrest actually beat Brentford last year, but it was a false dawn, you know, Nuno was gone within a couple of weeks. Like, surely there won't be a turnover of manager in the next month. So just, you would like them just, not consolidation, but actually just be no relegation battle this year. So like, you'll take a hit at the start because, you know, there is just that bedding in with a new manager. Because look, it's like we're going to be going to the J in a bit now, and obviously there's a lot about Mayo. And again, like, even Mayo had a decent league, won 5 out of 7, and then Roscommon happens, right? I mean, this is in a 38 game season. There's going to be a few bits at the start, you know. So look, if Forrest, you'd love them to challenge for Europe, that would be. But it's early days. Yeah.
Hopefully Glasner Marinakis relationship stays positive. Doesn't always with Marinakis.
You can see with the two lads, and Glasner's not shy either. He's when needs be, you know.
100%. By the way, the name of that player Villa we're looking at is Joel Ordonez.
That's it. Yeah,
Bruges player. Should we mention the Pep? You've kind of brought up the Pep and Mourinho documentaries, lad. Mark Gallagher, on page 61 of the Irish Mail on Sunday, is touching on. Well, he touches on both. It's funny how it's called a Pep Doc. Pep Doc shows that if you've got it haunted, like it's a Manchester City documentary, the four-parter. I've seen the first two episodes.
You've
seen the first two. And the first episode, have either of you seen it?
No, I've seen the clips. Are clips everywhere. Yeah.
Well, all those clips are in the first episode pretty much.
Oh, really?
Which is, it's a very strong first episode, but...
Elephant in the room because it's Man City.
Yeah.
Anting about the charges.
In the first two episodes, no.
Because it's not referenced in the review.
No, it's not. No, obviously I haven't seen the second two, the final two episodes, so maybe it is, but it's not that it's warts and all, but it almost leaves things in, like discussions in the dressing room where you're like, you're surprised that it's been allowed to go to air, do you know, and it's...
Yeah, well, look, it wouldn't be if he was still there, right?
Well, that's it too,
This is the last dance propelled. We don't have to wait, you know, 22 years. We've got it within 2 months, you could argue, so... Yeah, like I didn't get reading Mark's piece yet, but just everything I've heard about it is, as far as these in-house go, it's as good as you'll get. Watched the Mourinho one myself and thought it was good, particularly the Inter Milan, the part two. Look, you are, and it's touched upon in another piece in the papers, I think it's Jonathan Norcroft did the...
Sunday Times, yeah.
Charisma, you know, like, off these guys. And there's probably a deficit now, is there?
In terms of managers,
Premier League,
yeah.
Compare what the Premier League has been used to, like, I mean, Guardiola, Klopp, like, even in the years of, you know, Ronaldo and Messi knocking them in, the rock stars were probably the two biggest players were playing in La Liga, obviously, but the biggest managers were in the Premier League, and now they're gone, you know, because they were just, look, they, in a way, like, you could argue that it wasn't sustainable. Like, that's the biggest thing. You think Man City, sure, they have the talent, but it's always like, to be at the top of that dressing room, to be able to command a dressing room like that, where you're like, that, you know, we're talking about Mourinho going into Madrid, and his big, one of the reasons he got it is there's someone who's an even bigger ego than some of the players. But Guardiola was the alpha in that dressing room. So, what's what seems to be striking about the documentary is just the emotional energy that this takes up. It is not easy being, well, it looks easy when you have the payroll, you can buy whoever, you use the term, no, you know, money, no object. And the same with Klopp, the amount that that he invested in it. So now that they are out of it, there's possibly a little bit of a charisma deficit, but what it makes now is that these documentaries, like, it brought back what Mourinho was like at Chelsea the first time, you know, whatever you say. And look, it probably brushed under a little bit. It mentioned, you know, Frisk, and it didn't go really into Wenger so much. It touched on it, but you'd have to say, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing the Guardiola, because I've read some of the books on him. You know, he's been quite open through the years, but this will be, it just seems to be compelling because they are such compelling characters.
Yeah, no, there's a couple of bits in Mark Gallagher's piece just that I had flagged, because it's like, one of them, this is obviously to do with the City one, where he's saying it's a sign of just how good a documentary A Beautiful Obsession is that by the end of the fourth part, Guardiola and City are nearly likable. Found myself thinking that during the World Cup, actually, with Erling Haaland. I was like, finally, he's actually one of the good guys here now. You can actually, like, enjoy watching him play. But then there's a bit where Mark says, you probably know that the Netflix have also released a documentary to coincide with the start of the season. Mourinho is also well worth watching, but for entirely different reasons. If A Beautiful Obsession feels like a chilling psychological thriller, Netflix's three-parter is almost a piece of soft fluff by comparison. It's all about one man too, but more about his ego and relentless myth-making. And that kind of feeds in what you're saying, though, in terms of the Mourinho one, because I remember at that time, like, it was 21 years ago when he arrived in the Premier League, when he won the Champions League with Porto. Something that wouldn't have happened only for a goal that was given against Paul Scholes at Old Trafford. We won't get into that, running down the touchline. But even then, it felt like there was no one like him. Even 20 years, I'm trying to think, I would have been, 18-ish around then. Like, it didn't feel like there was anyone like Mourinho in football. And what he was doing at Chelsea, obviously a whole special one stuff, but it was coming in with Abramovich as well at that point. He'd obviously been in for a year, and it felt like the Premier League, and that was the start of, like, oligarchs and hedge funds and all the rest of it, and the Glazers weren't too far behind, and kind of leverage buyouts. That's how football in the Premier League, it felt like, began to change, and Mourinho was at the very heart of that. And then, as you were saying, though, like, with that documentary, some of the stuff that he's done at the same time has been appalling.
And it didn't get into, which is the question, because it was probably in, they were near the end, you know, post-production, and then, well, he gets the Madrid job, but there is no narrative about, really, about, have you started to lose it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's hardly a mention of Spurs. There's nothing about the Turkish, you know, Fenerbahce. Just a bit Roma, I win wherever I am kind of thing. Because that is, look, it's amazing how the years go. You're looking at how young he was in 05 and now he's this, and it makes us think of all of ourselves. But by the same token, but now that he's back at Madrid, like, but that question, he had certain parameters, obviously, and some of it they showed where they were asking a bit about the family and everything. And there is that telling line where he said, they're better without me. And even, you know, there's been that talk during the week as well about, like, is that the proper title for the documentary, A Beautiful Obsession? Because it shows the downside of
the rawness of
and the dark side of an obsession.
Well, when he's talking about that, and it's quoted in fairness in Mark Gallagher's piece, about when he's talking about the divorce after the 2-0 defeat to Juventus in the Champions League, their seventh loss in 10 games during that very poor run in the winter of 2024, when he's in the dressing room, and for people who haven't seen it, it's amazing, but he's basically saying to his players, I want to confess something, I'm effing divorced from the most effing beautiful woman in your planet. It's my wife, my ex-wife, I love her unbelievably, but we lost the passion for many years, many reasons we lost the passion. I love her, yeah, absolutely. She loves me, yeah, but we lost the passion. And it goes on to say that you can't play football without passion. So it's, and he's emotional, you know, and you can tell from the...
But, you know, I'll have to just watch this, but you're wondering, well, if you're full on like that all the time, that's how you lose a bit of the passion. Like, there is sometimes...
There's only so much you can give, like.
Yeah, and there is just an element of just keeping it on an even keel. Well, you have to dive in at certain times, you know... for a sustainable, like you'd have to say overall. Now Ferguson came to the viewpoint, David, that yeah. you know he wanted to spend a bit more time at home. Did his sister in law die, or he just said I need to spend more time
yeah,
at home.
His wife's sister passed away. Yeah. And he kind of that's when in 2014. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But you could argue that he did have other interests. You know, like as much as he watched football yeah. and you know the Scouts. That you know, you could see why. That was another thing about the Mourinho thing. Actually, he actually had a bit of a pop at Pep. You know, he said sabbaticals are for wimps, basically. You know, like I don't believe in that. You just keep the fat to the floor. But that's why a Guardiola has to go away and dream it all up again. You know, it's like.
But even that point, say sabbaticals are for wimps. But I think Mourinho was back at Madrid for a couple of reasons. I think obviously, like. Maybe how it ended there for him, there was maybe an acceptance that he could have actually stayed a bit longer. I think that's people who report Madrid saying Perez has always kind of had that maybe he should have kept Mourinho a bit longer. But in fairness, he stayed in the game long. He's kind of hung in by his fingernails at certain times, and he's managed to stay in at a point. And this happens in sport, that happens in football especially, where the way the game has gone, it's gone full circle again. And it's almost coming back around to where what he can do might actually work again. Mm. Even for all the talk about great coaches, like look at the players. If there's a fella who could potentially, he has no excuses at Madrid, you know what I mean? But still, some of it is still hilarious because like it's like anyone, we talk about Ferguson, like just filled with contradictions. You look at, say, Mourinho coming out, I think it was it last night or yesterday, talking about we're in a world of anti-bullying, except when it comes to Vinicius Junior, he's constantly getting bullied. And yet, when he was the manager of Benfica, was his last season, and they played Real Madrid, and he was Vinicius Junior was on the end of horrific abuse. What does Mourinho do? No, he actually fuels it a little bit. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, so like that's why I think these documentaries, and I will, you know, I'll kind of watch it. The City one and the Guardiola one, I'm sorry, I just, when you know what's going on at the moment with that club and you see a documentary, if that's not at the heart of what's actually going on, well then, like, it's not. It's nice.
When are the findings ever going to come out?
Well, see, this is it. Well, this thing, Richard Masters, obviously, with the Premier League, he did his round table, a lot of interviews ahead of the new season. I think, who was it? One of the reporters was saying, I think for the third or fourth year in a row now, he said, I can't actually talk about it. So, like, other clubs seem to get punished very, very quickly, and now there's maybe, they'll say there's complexities to it, but. And obviously City are refuting the charges and are going against it. But it's hanging over the Premier League. And that's why maybe if they had it made it just purely about Guardiola. And again, I'm saying this, people might, if they're listening who have watched it, because it's not mentioned in the review and I haven't watched it yet, they might well give some time across to it. But it's going to be something, like there was a point where Guardiola said if they are found guilty that he would quit, that he wouldn't be, he trusts a total trust in these people. But like, this is going to be a massive part of his career, and there's going to be a documentary in a few years time, anything that we've seen about Man City and Guardiola is going to be viewed through a completely different prism. Do you know what I mean? So just stress, the word there was prism.
Yes.
Not anything else.
But like, word, yeah.
I just, that's why, like, so I was, you get messages about it, and like, I don't know, I just, how can you have it? Again, I'm saying this, having not watched it, I'm only going off the review. How can you have any documentary about Guardiola and Man City and not have that mentioned in it? You know, it's going to be the defining legacy for him as a man and a manager. As a manager, do you know what I mean? Like, it's the club he was at the longest.
Going back to, about the Mourinho one, like, and Mark said that it's a bit puffy, and I said there are things that leaves out, but like that, and you're going back to Madrid and Perez, a bit of him, that it would have liked Mourinho to stay on. He had to go, like, because of just how the paranoia through worried about leaks, and he had alienated, obviously, the likes of Casillas, and in fairness to the documentary makers, they got Casillas, and you got seeing his perspective on it. So, like, it goes back to this. There's always like, who's the manager for a certain situation in time? That this is, look, sport is a whole gamble all the time. Mourinho may be worth it this time, but that time he had to go after just where it was.
And let's hope I would love to see him win La Liga or the Champions League, because you imagine what he's going to say after that.
Yeah. Like, I hope Troy Parrott beats him to a few honours. He's over there.
Playing
Troy,
in a couple of weeks. Yeah. 4th September.
Yeah, big one.
Is that when it is?
It's the 4th to the 5th. Yeah, Friday, 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We mentioned, we'll get into Troy Parrott. By the way, Erling Haaland has apparently cut his hair. That's the big story in some of the tabloids this morning. There's videos on social media of him cutting his hair. Like Samson, like fully cut, like almost buzz cutting the sides. And
is that a big amount? Is that a bigger haircut in the Premier League as the day David Beckham unveiled his shaven head at Filbert Street? That's how long ago that was. It was Filbert Street.
March 2000, I think. I remember being over in Portugal covering Sonia and getting the papers back then. That's when you saw it for the first time. No phones and Jesus, what's going on there? Yeah,
Matthew reminds me. Rooney came back with the hair transplant, which was another big one.
But you knew it was coming up, Rooney, because he went full ball. He literally bicked his head to be able to go and plan it. It's like the Brighton manager, Hursler. He's doing the same. But with the Beckham thing, this is a tangent. But again, it just shows you even say the control. I mean, if we're going to reference that at the end with Mark English, I thought that piece that it was Sinead Cassan did, the coach, in terms of trust. But like even in the dressing room, it just shows you the level of control Ferguson had, where he was trying to reef off the hat on Beckham's head in the dressing room before the warm-up and going out because he didn't want him to be wearing it. And Beckham wanted to do the big unveiling for his haircut, you know. And even at that point, Ferguson didn't want them to be doing that. You know?
Well, I had a similar story in almost identical sort where I was Beckham and my primary school teacher was Ferguson, in that as soon as Beckham got that haircut, I was obsessed with Beckham. We had a goldfish that I named Beckham as a kid.
Yeah. And mine were York and Cole.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Beckham didn't last long because my brother threw Cheerios and milk into the bowl. Thought Beckham looked hungry one day and it was the end of Beckham. But I got the buzz cut. I went bald as soon as Beckham did it. Whatever haircut he did when I was a kid, I had the Mohican.
Did you go Mohican?
Went Mohican the whole lot. I wouldn't be able to do it now. I don't have enough left. But I went with the buzz cut and I was so embarrassed by it then that I wore a hat into school, and then the teacher at the start of class was like, "Shane, take off your hat." And I sheepishly take off my hat. You can imagine the reaction in the classroom. Yeah. This lad has just lost the plot.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.